This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. We're exposing the deep state and the shadow government for the full 2 hours. Paul L. Williams, co-author of The Killing of Uncle Sam, The Demise of the United States of America, is standing by, but first, some quick programming notes. There will be no live YouTube stream again. We're in summer mode, folks, but they will return sometime in September. However, the audio from this show will be posted on the YouTube channel in a few days, so be looking for that. And if you haven't already done so, please hit the red sub button on the YouTube channel, The Conspiracy Show. As I say, we are in summer mode, and that means that my live YouTube stream producer Ryan is off. Albert, my story producer, is off. However, Ian Robertson, my fine rockabilly friend, is behind the glass, twisting the knobs and the dials and the doodads. Incidentally, his band, the Grease Marks, has a new album out, and please check it out, buy it, buy some for your friends, and please help send this young man to college. And it's available at greasemarks.com. Is that right, Ian? Greasemarks.com.
That's it.
All right. Next week on the program, Carl Gallops, the pastor Carl Gallops, my good friend, he has a brand new book out. And by golly, I think I wrote the foreword. And the book, incidentally, is called Gods of Ground Zero. So Carl will be here again for the full 2 hours. All right, let's dive into the deep state, shall we? Let me crib from the inside the dust jacket here. Pride, greed, and power have driven men to do the unthinkable, including selling out their nations and unsuspected citizens to the most corrupt and destructive invisible global leaders on Earth. But how did this happen on American soil? How did the downfall begin, and who were the predators that the land of the free and home of the brave fell victim to, and how is all hope and is all hope lost? And as I say, the co-author, Dr. Paul L. Williams, is a journalist and the author of 15 books, including Among the Ruins, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Catholic Church, Crescent Moon Rising, The Islamic Transformation of America, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia, and which is being made into a movie series for AMC Network. Well done. And he is the winner of 3 first-place Keystone Press Awards and has written articles for major news outlets, including USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, Newsmax, The Counterterrorist, and National Review. He holds a PhD in philosophical theology from Drew University and has served as a consultant on organized crime and international terrorism for the FBI and an adjunct professor of theology, humanities, and philosophy. Dr. Williams, welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Boy, now I sound important. It's great to be on your show.
I was going to say, we got to get you a job. You don't have enough to do.
There you go. Yeah, that sounds like a great guy.
Are you literally writing a book while we're doing this show?
I am writing a book while we're doing this show. That's the truth.
Okay. All right, the killing of Uncle Sam, the demise of the United States of America. We've got 2 hours, but even that is not nearly enough to even scratch the surface. So I thought a good place to begin would be with Cecil Rhodes. And when people talk about secret societies, and or they say, "Oh, they don't exist, and it's all fantasy." I mean, we need to look no further than Professor Quigley, who wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. He was a Georgetown professor, taught President Clinton, I believe, was thanked during Clinton's inaugural address. He pointed out Professor Quigley, and Quigley has talked about the existence of this secret round table that was started by Cecil Rhodes. So let's start there. Who was Cecil Rhodes, and what of this secret round table?
Well, Cecil John Rhodes was an Englishman who was the son of a minister. He had asthma, and when he was about 17, he went to South Africa to work on the farm of his brother. And in South Africa, the farm failed, and he went up north to Kimberley in South Africa to the diamond fields. And in the diamond fields around Kimberley, he made a fortune. And he returned to England, went to Oxford. And at Oxford, one night after he became a Mason in 1877, he had a vision. He had a hell of an idea. And he said that this idea, this is what he said. He said, "The idea came before me like a wisp of will, and it was this grand idea of the entire world under one rule, and we could do this. This one rule could be established by a secret society of British aristocrats and noblemen and bankers." And he had this idea in 1977, and then he went about and he formed the secret society. And that's really the start of everything. The secret society, some of the members, you know, interestingly enough, were Nathan Rothschild, who of course was had a banking empire throughout the world and ties to every bank, you know, in existence. Another member was Reginald Britt, who was the closest advisor to Queen Victoria. Another member of secret society was Arthur Balfour, who became the Prime Minister of England. Another member of the secret society was William Stead, the journalist, England's foremost journalist. Another member of the secret society was Arthur Primrose, the fifth Earl of Rosebery and the leading member of the House of Lords in England. Another member was Albert Lord Grey, another member of British Parliament. Another member was General George Chinese Gordon, the hero of Khartoum, who died in Khartoum. All these men had several things in common. One, they were all Masons. Two, they were all graduates of Oxford. Three, they were all very much interested in the occult, many of them with theosophists. And even Cecil Rhodes, to the end of his life, his library was just filled with, overloaded with books on theosophy. They were imperialists. They were all tied to the Rothschilds, in one way or the other, usually for their business interest. Primrose, for instance, Lord Rosebery, was Rothschild's son-in-law. And they were all, for the most part, pederast. They were interested in, like Cecil Rhodes himself and Lord Rosebery and Balfour. All these people were notorious pederasts. They went to these clubs in England where they could have relations with young boys. So it wasn't really the nicest of groups.
No.
And but this group got together, and their first thought under the direction, it was formed as a circle within a circle, his secret society. There was a circle, and the inner circle was a circle of generals, and that consisted of Cecil Rhodes himself and the Rothschild and William Stead and Milner. And around that circle was the circle of leaders. And that consisted of Balfour and these other people. And then the outer circle was a circle of helpers. And by 1889, that circle came to include Cardinal Manning, who was the leading Catholic prelate in London at that time, and also General William Booth. Do you know who he is?
I'm guessing he may be a descendant of John Wilkes Booth or a relative of John Wilkes Booth. I'm guessing.
No, this guy was the founder of the Salvation Army.
Oh. Oh, interesting.
And you see, what Rhodes and Rothschild believed at that time, they believed that by bringing the Catholics in, they could institute something. This is going back in 1877 to 1889. They wanted to start an ecumenical movement so the Catholics would become more like Protestants, and that's why they were working with Booth and with Manning. And the Protestants, in turn, would be more open to Catholicism, which would open the way for a new world religion. That was part of the plot from the beginning.
And was this all being sort of paid for? Because when I think of Cecil Rhodes, I think of the diamond cartel in South Africa.
Yeah. You got to realize, he bought up every diamond mine in the De Beers Mining Company, the De Beers Mine. Diamonds and Mining Company. He owned that completely. He controlled 90% of the diamonds throughout the world in his lifetime. But he was funded. He bought all the diamond mines thanks to Rothschild.
Right.
So he was really joined at the hip to Rothschild. You really couldn't separate the two.
Now, one might ask, why do we need a round table to do this? This is the height of the British Empire. The sun did not set on the British Empire at this point. They had pretty much everything locked down. What more did they want? I guess that's kind of a rhetorical question. I'm guessing they wanted the United States back, the colony they lost under King George III.
Yeah, well, you see, at that time, this is why they thought it was that a new world order under British rule, a one world order, was possible. Just as you said, the British at that time, of course, they had colonies in South America, they had Iceland, and they had Canada. They had not only the British Isles, but they had Australia and New Zealand. They had India. They had many colonies in Africa. So, as a matter of fact, 25% of the world landmass in 1889 was controlled by the British government. So they realized that, you know, this is not a stretch for us to take over the rest of the world. And by the end of World War One, they were really well on their way to doing that. And they realized that, number one, that the politics and everything were already aimed in that direction. But with Rothschild and with a bank behind them, they would also have the financing to make this possible. And the first thing that they decided to do, thing they wanted to accomplish was the conquest of Africa. Rhodes wanted to create a railroad that would go from Cairo all the way down to Cape Town. And he wanted to take over, he wanted to drive all of the, like there were Germans in Africa, throughout Germany colonies, there were Dutch colonies, there were French colonies. He wanted Africa to become red. British red. And that's the very first thing that this society wanted to do, because Africa contained so many natural resources that were important at that time. Iron ore, coal, timber. And, you know, I mean, we're just in really the height of the Industrial Revolution. And so they were intent on taking over Africa. And to do that, what they did, his society, they instigated the Second Boer War that took place in 1899. The leaders of the Boer War, including Lord Alfred Milner, were all members of the Rhodes Group. All members of the Rhodes Group. Every one of them was a member of the Rhodes Group. And they accomplished that. Rhodes and Rothschild, when they formed the secret society, realized realized the importance of the press. They took over the press. Jeffrey Dawson, who was the editor of the London Times, became a member of the secret society. It was called the Society of the Elect. I already mentioned William Stead, who was from the Pall Mall Gazette.
So I'm guessing, sorry for the interruption, I've got to break away here, Paul, but I'm guessing a lot of like the foot soldiers, maybe those not in the inner circle, thought, hey, what's wrong with spreading British civilization to the world? We'll be helping out these developing countries. Many of them, I'm guessing, probably thought in their hearts, in their minds, that this was good for the world. There was no necessarily any animus or nefarious intention. They wanted to bring civilization to the world. So I'm guessing perhaps this may have been why they were able to recruit people like editors of newspapers and so forth. We'll pick this up on the other side. The killing
Absolutely.
Of Uncle Sam.
Let me answer that. That's the truth.
All right. The Killing of Uncle Sam, The Demise of the United States of America, co-author Paul L. Williams is with us right here on The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
Be afraid of the dark. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
We are back with Dr. Paul L. Williams, The Killing of Uncle Sam. We should mention the co-author, Rodney Howard Brown, not with us tonight, but we are delighted to have Paul with us. And we were talking about the secret society under Cecil Rhodes and trying to take over Africa.
Yeah, the Second Boer War.
Yes.
Rodney Howard Brown, since you mentioned his name, is a South African. He was born and raised in South Africa, and, you know, when I got together with him, I mean, we did a lot of research into Rhodes himself. Any listener, by the way, you should read the primary works by Cecil Rhodes. Don't read the secondary sources. Read him, and you'll find out what he says about his plans. And once again, people like William Stead, who was a member, and Milner, all these people were prolific writers, and we have exactly, I mean, people can go back and they can verify exactly what they wanted to do and how they accomplished what they accomplished.
And I mentioned Professor Carroll Quigley, Georgetown University.
Yeah, but Quigley's a secondary source, but an excellent one.
But he did write about this, and he had access to the archives, right? The Rockefeller archives.
He did. But the thing that's interesting is Rhodes himself wrote. I mean, all this, you know, his writings, you can still obtain them. You can even obtain them on the internet. And you can read them, and you can read his speeches and his writings and his plans for the secret society, and you can read works by members of the secret society, like I told you before, like Milner, who was very, very, very prolific, and, you know, I mean, these people documented what they did. Stead, they were all prolific in writing. So anybody can document what we're talking about right now. But in Africa, they instigated the Second Boer War. The Boers were the Dutch who were in South Africa. At the end of the war, they placed all the Dutch and everybody who opposed them in concentration camps. The first concentration camps in history. And they killed hundreds of thousands of them. And after the Second Boer War, they set sights on the United States. And they wanted the United States to become reunited with Great Britain in this attempt to forge a new world order. And it was easy for them to do that as well, because through Rothschild and people like Lord Rosebery, Rothschild and Rosebery were very, very close to people like Andrew Carnegie, very, very close to J.P. Morgan, very close to John D. Rockefeller. And they got in contact with these people, and they wanted to form a chapter of their secret society in the United States. And they did that through J.P. Morgan, who in 1903, when this chapter was set up, was the richest man in America. He had he bought Carnegie Steel from Andrew Carnegie, and he formed United States Steel. He owned all he was a major controller of all the railroads throughout the country, of the iron ore mines, a great landowner, banking businesses in France and in London, in Germany, and of course in New York. He was once again the richest man in America and the most wired. He formed at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel the Pilgrim Society, which was really a chapter of the Rhodes Secret Society.
And what year was that, Paul?
That was 1903.
1903. All right. So pre formulation of the Federal Reserve. But there,
right.
I mean, they had, I don't know if Rhodes was behind earlier attempts, but even going back as far as, let's say, for example, was it Hamilton?
You're going back to the central, there are two central banks in the United States.
Right.
One with Hamilton and one that was instituted after the War of 1812. So Rothschild had a history here and he wanted to create another central bank, and that was really part of the reason. Look, this is the plot. I'm glad you're telling me this, because you're jarring my memory. That what they realized they had to do several things in order to unite the United States with Great Britain again and to create a new world order. One is they had to take control of the media. They could do that through Morgan, who ended up controlling the Hearst newspaper empire. The 25 of America's leading newspapers, including New York Times, Washington Post, were all owned by Morgan.
And so he bought them from William Randolph Hearst, of course, who is the inspiration for Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
He the guy that said, you get me the pictures and I'll supply the war.
There you go. So he can, they could control the media through Morgan. And once again, the interest, this is another thing, the interest between Carnegie and Rockefeller and Morgan were so intricate and so interconnected that John Moody, who was America's foremost financial analyst at the turn of the century, said it's impossible to separate what belongs to Morgan from what belongs to Carnegie and from what belongs to Rockefeller. They're all intermeshed. So it was really from the start, these three families formed a cartel.
What about the Forbes family? Because they talk about the Boston Brahmins, those a group
no,
of
no, no, not
no?
like the no, no,
no.
Look at that. They're minor league players compared to these three families.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, minor. You got to realize that Carnegie made his fortune through steel, and then Morgan took over that steel industry, and Rockefeller was becoming one of the wealthiest men. He was the third wealthiest man in America when the Pilgrim Society was formed. But by the end of World War I, the Rockefellers were even richer than the Rothschilds.
Amazing.
Because of oil.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Standard Oil. And you got, that's all part of the story.
We have the current president who likes to use the term, the term deep state and made it vogue again. I mean, we've been using that term for many years, 20 years on the radio program, and you, I'm sure, have been writing about it for that long. And now, of course, it's just this, it's just thrown around. But at the time, in the early 1900s, when you had like Teddy Roosevelt, was he on side with them, but playing like
Teddy Roosevelt screamed from the rafters that there's a secret society afoot seeking to control the government. He warned the American people about it.
All right, so he was kind of the disruptor, and
he warned them. He said, "This is happening." Now, going back to the Pilgrim Society, this is important for where you want to be headed. The members of the Secret Society came to include Elihu Root, who was the Secretary of State at that time, people like Cornelius Vanderbilt, but more importantly, Henry Davison, Frank Vanderlip, Charles D. Norton, Nelson Aldrich, Paul Warburg. Think of these names, right?
Right.
Vanderlip, Davison, Norton, Aldrich, Warburg. These people formed the Pilgrim Society, were the original pilgrims. These very same people, the exact same people, ended up where?
They ended up on Jekyll Island.
Jekyll Island, creating the Federal Reserve.
That's it.
Very same people.
And
all under the governance of J.P. Morgan. And the plan in the beginning was to take control of the U.S. economy. And by creating the Federal Reserve, took control of the of America's money, the manufacturing of money. They could create prosperity produced by producing a lot of cash. They could create a depression by withdrawing the cash. They could have some businesses boom by loaning them, by providing money to the banks that are seeking money, or they could all cause other businesses to fail. They controlled everything. When they met at Jekyll Island and when the Fed became into effect in 1913, you got to realize the Federal Reserve System that governs the economy of the United States, number one, is not federal. It's privately owned. And the owners, the shareholders from the beginning, were the Morgans, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Schiffs, the Warburgs. Many of them, a great deal of them, were not Americans. And they owned the Fed. They own the Fed.
Right.
That's what's important to realize.
Talk to me about
owned it, and they still do own it.
Talk to me about, because this is kind of a contentious issue, how this was passed. Some say that it was rammed through during a Christmas recess when there was no one sitting in the House, very few people, nobody read it. Talk to me about how it was passed, the Federal Reserve Act.
Well, it passed through through a variety of ways. One is that Aldrich, Nelson Aldrich, who was a leading senator, was at Jekyll Island and was a member of the Pilgrim Society. And he provided payoffs to a lot of the other senators and congressmen to vote in favor of it. That's one thing that people aren't, even when you read things, when you read wonderful books about Jekyll Island, including the work by Griffith, they failed to take into account the payoffs.
Right.
These people received money to support the Federal Reserve, and that's why they all agreed to pass that that act right before the Christmas break in 1913, and it did pass. And as I said, the Federal Reserve is privately owned, still is. It's not federal. It's not a reserve. They have no money in reserve. That's complete fallacy. There is no reserve.
Right. So they create money literally out of thin air, and
exactly.
And immediately, I mean, upon lending it to the banks, who then loan it out.
Yeah.
Now, how does this happen?
They also provide the money to the government.
Right.
And the United States government has to pay these sons of bitches money.
Well,
interest.
Here's the thing. The politicians, many of them, they love it because all of their pet little projects, they no longer have to go to the voters and say, we have to raise your taxes, because the money is just created out of thin air.
Yeah. Yep. And now it's not even created. All it is clicked on a mouse. It's not even created.
Right, right.
In any case, they create the Federal Reserve.
Right,
and by that time, at the beginning of that was the first stab in the heart of Uncle Sam, because the United States lost control of its economy. It was now in private hands.
Were there no constitutional challenges? Because according to the Constitution, the federal government is responsible for minting the money.
Exactly.
Where were the challenges? Where were the core challenges?
There still hasn't been. And not only that, but the Fed is, the Fed has never really been audited.
No, that's true. That's true. How would you
absolutely.
Do that? I mean, I know this is a bit of a...
The entire operation, of course, is they say, the chairman of the Fed is appointed by the president. But, you see, the chairman of the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C., doesn't control the Fed. The chairman of the Federal Reserve in New York controls the Fed.
Ah, and who appoints him?
There are 13 Federal Reserve banks. They're all beholden not to this not to Janet Yellen or the head of the Fed in Washington D.C. They're beholden to the chairman of the Federal Reserve in New York. It was like that from the get-go.
I did not know that. Listen, we have to take another time out. This is fascinating, Paul. Appreciate you staying with us for the full 2 hours. The killing of Uncle Sam, the demise of the United States of America. We'll be back with Dr. Paul Williams right here on The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett.
When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
We are back with Paul Williams, co-author of The Killing of Uncle Sam. Right now we're talking about the Federal Reserve. And you were telling me, this is something I didn't know, that the real power rests not with the federal chair, but with the chair of the New York Federal Reserve. How did that, why? And how did, who chooses
it,
the...
Because look, at it was all a dog and pony show from the beginning. The people believed, and they still believe that, the chairman of the Fed is appointed by the president. We have control. No. Yeah, that's appointed. But that bank is beholden to the Federal Reserve in New York by the very structure of the Federal Reserve system. Benjamin Strong, the first leader of the Federal Reserve in New York, controlled everything.
Mm. Now, I think I mentioned this when you were on my podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, that up here in Canada, I believe we are the only country in the G7 that has a central bank that is owned by the Canadian people. The Bank of Canada is owned by the people. It was nationalized in the 1930s by Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King. And at that time, the Bank of Canada Act allowed provincial, municipal, and federal governments to borrow from the central bank at not 0% interest, but very low interest. But they couldn't borrow, you know, limitless amounts of money. It was proportional to as a percentage of their total budget. And this is how early infrastructure projects like the St. Lawrence Seaway was built, the Trans-Canada Highway. This is how we paid for our war effort during the Second World War. And then, lo and behold, during the 1970s, Prime Minister Trudeau stopped borrowing from the Bank of Canada. And now, of course, we all borrow from the Central Bank of Central Bank, the Bank of International Settlements.
So
we borrow from international lenders. But this they are totally ignoring the Bank of Canada Act in this country.
That's where we're headed, because the Bank of International Settlements, after the Federal Reserve was created, what the money cartel, the control of the Federal Reserve was controlled by the Pilgrim, the same people, the Rockefellers, the Morgans. Okay, mm-hmm. Those two families, really not even Carnegie then, because he was phasing out, and he only had one offspring, a girl, and she became insignificant. But these two families, by and large, controlled the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve, during the 1920s, when they had control of the economy, they since Morgan and Rockefeller controlled the press, they started encouraging the American people and people throughout the world to invest in the United States stock market. And they said that the press, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Herald Tribune that was in existence at that time, they all kept, and every day, day after day after day, Richard, promoting this idea that, look, if you invest $100, just $100, you can buy $1,000 worth of U.S. stock.
Right.
10 to 1.
Right.
That's all you need to do.
Highly
you
leveraged.
Give us $100 and you got $1,000 worth of stock.
Yes.
You can get rich in the stock market. And they had this something that was attached to this. This was, people were buying things on Western Union at that time, and you know, and over the phone. I mean, they weren't long contracts. They were wired. They were, you know, everything was done, you know, really in a very slow manner by phone and by Western Union. And attached to this agreement that you could get $1,000 for 100, and buy more and more and more stock for, you know, $10,000, you could buy $100,000 worth of stock. Well, the stipulation that the bankers had at that time, the Federal Reserve had at that time, was this was all subjected to a 24-hour call. And in 1929, what happened was the Federal Reserve called all these notes. So if you had this stock, you had $100,000 worth of stock that you had purchased for $10,000 overnight in 24 hours, you owed $100,000.
Right. How did the Fed? Why did the Fed have that ability to call?
Because what they did, look at, everything is contingent on the money supply. They instantly cut back the money supply. Cut back the money supply, the 24-hour call came into effect. The stocks went right through the cellar.
Right.
And the Morgans and the Rothschilds and the Kennedys and all these families could buy securities for pennies on the dollar.
Right,
and that's what
happened. Right, and
it was all engineered. And the American people fell into a depression that was only alleviated by war.
We'll take another time out. We'll come back and continue with the killing of Uncle Sam, the demise of the United States of America. Dr. Paul L. Williams, my guest. Stay right with us.
Corporations, governments, and sometimes entire civilizations. What goes up must come down. And it lands on The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Keeping an eye on the new world order. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Dr. Paul L. Williams, journalist, the author of 15 books, including Among the Ruins, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Catholic Church, Crescent Moon Rising, The Islamic Transformation of America, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia, and the latest, The Killing of Uncle Sam, The Demise of the United States of America, as I say, which is co-authored by Rodney Howard Brown. And we've been talking about the Federal Reserve and the Depression. Of course, this was the Fed. The idea of the Fed was sold to the American public and the representatives as this is going to stabilize the economy. You're not going to have wild swings. You're not going to have, you know, crashes and high inflation and so forth. It'll even everything out. But I mean, if you look at it from 1913 until now, I mean, how many deep recessions have we had compared to, say, pre-Fed? I mean, I know I think it was a serious depression in the 1880s.
And there was a great deal of turmoil in 1907, but right now, I mean, right now in America, in the United States of America, what you have is the American people, they could go into a recession tomorrow.
Right.
And it's not because of industry, it's not because of commerce. It just could be at the will of the governors
right.
of the Federal Reserve.
Right. It has nothing to do with the fundamentals of the economy. It's, as you say, it's this force that is constantly distorting the markets to the point where we really have no markets anymore. So you mentioned auditing the Fed.
Oh, well, let me be, Richard, if I may, since you brought up the Bank of International Settlements,
yes.
Could I touch on that
please
for one
do.
Second?
Please do.
Okay. What happened was, after creating the Depression in the United States, what happened was FDR, who was completely controlled by the cartel, put out an executive order that the gold of every United States citizen was to be confiscated. Now, my grandfather had, at that time, gold coins. He owned they called it a 5 and 10 store during the 1930s.
Right.
The government came in and took all of his gold coins. You weren't allowed to have gold coins. You weren't allowed to have gold. Your gold was taken from you, confiscated. If you did not, they came in your house, the police, and took it. People aren't aware of this now. And if you didn't give it up, you went to jail.
Did they pay market value?
They paid market value, but market value then was set, I think, something like $12 an ounce.
Right, right.
Okay, now all the gold that was taken from the American people, all of the gold, and went to the Federal Reserve, and they had a huge vault at the Federal Reserve of New York, as I said, which is the central Federal Reserve bank. They have a huge vault underneath there, and all the gold was shipped there. And there was so much gold that they had to create Fort Knox. And all this gold in the 1930s was transported to the Bank of International Settlements to create the Bank of International Settlements. That was all with the gold that was confiscated.
So there is no gold in Fort Knox.
Americans, United States citizens were robbed, fleeced, tarred and feathered.
How do you know? How do we know for certain that there is no gold in Fort Knox, that it was shipped to... Where is that in Bern, Switzerland, the Bank of International Settlements?
Yeah, okay. That's in Bern, Switzerland. Oh, that... Look at... The wonderful thing about that is all of these things are... I mean, that's... All people need to do is to really read. And right now, there's no excuse for it. They don't even need to buy books. I mean, you can go on your computer and you get the primary sources of this. The confiscated gold, where did it go? Where did it go? Just go to your computer, Google it, and you get primary sources.
So during the Cold War, a lot of
The Bank of International Settlements. Let's talk about that for one second.
Okay, all right.
That's the central bank of central banks. It was created by the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Morgans, and that's a central bank. That means that the central banks in Japan, in Germany at that time, in France, in South Africa, throughout the world, all the central banks get their funding from the Bank of International Settlements. That, too, is private. And the shares are primarily owned by the Federal Reserve, members of the Federal Reserve in the United States.
Right, right. So... let me just go back to Fort Knox for a moment, because so the idea that there is no gold in Fort Knox, I think this sort of we got a glimpse of this when during the Cold War, I think it was, or maybe even during the Second World War, a lot of countries shipped their gold for safekeeping over to the United States because they were worried about the Nazis and then later the Soviets taking their gold. So when Germany recently came a calling for their gold, they were told it was going to take years, and they weren't even allowed to go down into the basement to sort of take an accounting of their gold.
Right.
So, I mean, and then we...
It wasn't there.
It wasn't there.
It wasn't there. A lot of the gold in the 1930s, you got to realize, you had great upheavals in China. And all that gold from China, from the various dynasties, the start of the Mao, and that time the Great March, all that gold from China was flown in by Chiang Kai-shek into the Federal Reserve in New York, and from that, all that gold went out to the Bank of International Settlements.
Ah, now China doesn't have a central bank; they own their central, they own their bank, don't they?
Okay, yep, they do now.
And what about Russia?
Russia has a central bank, always has.
They have their own?
No.
No, they don't?
No.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. All right. And I'm guessing at one time Iraq maybe had their own, and then after Saddam fell, they no longer do?
They, right.
And exactly. Same with Gaddafi, Libya.
Exactly. He
we're seeing, own, are, we seeing, bank, yeah. are we seeing a pattern here, folks?
There you go, Canada. You guys better watch out.
Well, no, I mean, they've already accomplished that, but they just
They ignore the BIS.
Yeah, they just ignore the Bank of Canada Act, and no one talks about it. Anyway, I wanted to ask you.
Listen, you guys up in Canada, you cannot let these bastards have your money. You can't. Because, first of all, they're not concerned about Canada. Not one bit. They want to seize all the natural resources throughout the world. That's the end game. Look at money. There's a big difference between real money and capital. Capital is real wealth, and money is just paper. And these people want real wealth. They want the natural resources. Wealth comes from natural resources, from all the natural resources in the world, even like water, gold, naturally. Any natural resource
right.
is a source of wealth.
Land. I like to say anything you can drop on your foot, not just paper.
That's right. But this money, your money, the money in the United States, the money for the most part throughout the world, is just fiat money. It's made out of nothing.
What percentage of the I'm looking at the, like the U.S. debt, if you look at unfunded liabilities, Social Security and Medicaid and all of these things, it's around $200 trillion or something. It's just astronomical. And that could never be paid back.
That's part of the end game.
You see, the
end game is for Canada and the United States and all of the free world to become socialist countries. Because under socialism, Rhodes, all these people, Rhodes, Rothschild, Morgan, Carnegie, they were all socialist.
Well, socialism for the rest of us and capitalism for them.
No, socialism for all of us, and so we're all dependent on the government, and they control the government.
Right. I guess more of a they're more like feudalists.
I think the right word is synarchy. SYNARCHY, synarchy. You got a small group. It's going all the way back to now Rothschild and Rockefeller primarily, who control everything.
If you don't control your currency, though, it's like not controlling your borders. If you don't control your own currency, you really can't have a country. If you can't control your own monetary policy, what's the point?
They knew that in the beginning. Look at that. Rothschild said that, Meyer Rothschild said in the beginning, you know, he said, if I control the money, I control everything. I control everything.
I care not who makes the laws, right?
Yeah, there you go. Good, Richard. Yeah. So, look, that was only part of it. So going back to the Fed, they formed the Federal Reserve, this small cartel of people. And after that, what they did was they brought in immediately with the Fed the graduated income tax. This is all part of the demise of Uncle Sam. We never had income tax in the United States, prior to 1914.
Right.
Didn't exist.
And it was supposed to be temporary to pay for the war effort.
Right.
Right.
And it was also supposed to be graduated so that the wealthy paid the lion's share, the poor people paid almost nothing. Well, what really happened was within that income tax, within the federal income tax law that was passed in 1913, what happened was there were ways to create tax shelters, and these tax shelters became known as foundations. So the Morgans and the Rothschilds and the Carnegies all set up these huge foundations, and the foundations. That was another part of the demise of Uncle Sam, because the foundations, in turn, started to fund all the school systems throughout the United States. The colleges and the universities, to this day, they kept funding them so that the colleges, the universities, the secondary schools all became dependent upon the foundations for their income. For instance, right now in the United States, even a school like Harvard or Princeton, do you know that 20% of their income, total income, comes from foundations?
Makes sense, right? And a lot of it comes from the alumni.
So what would happen if the foundations stopped giving them money?
Uh-huh. That's right.
Many of them, by the smaller colleges throughout the United States, would close.
He who pays the piper calls the tune. So they tell them what to teach.
They tell them what to teach, And they could. What happened was this was really, really, really nefarious, because they took control of the educational system. They dictated exactly what should be taught. They set about overlooking the hiring of the administrations of colleges and universities, so that everything would be governed and according to their dictates. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Well,
that's
the
college students, by and large, if you talk to them, and I talk to them all the time, and I taught them, they're as thick as mud.
Well,
they don't read.
There's that famous.
They can't read or write.
There's that famous test that was published online a number of years ago. It was a grade 8. I think it was from someplace in Missouri, and it was a science test or a general knowledge test that was administered to grade 8 students. And I tell you, when you look at those questions, it's something probably a university graduate would struggle with today. So this there is a deliberate dumbing down. That's been going on.
And part of it, you see, that was from the beginning. And they controlled, they said they started to standardize everything, standardized education throughout the United States, standardized tests, standardized textbooks. And to such an extent that right now, and not only to standardize, but the students, that everything had to be homogenous. If you had students who were very bright, and you were segregating them from the students who were very dumb, that became a no-no in the United States.
All right, we got to take a time out, Paul. We'll come back. The killing of Uncle Sam, the demise of the United States of America. Stay put, hour two to come, right here on The Conspiracy Show.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the internet, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to all of you listening in on our flagship station, Zoomer Radio, AM 740, 96.7 FM here in Toronto. All of you listening down the line on one of our affiliate stations, 38 of you now across North America. And of course, those of you who take the show with you wherever you go on either the Zoomer Radio app or the Conspiracy Show app, both free downloads and both terrific apps, really the best radio apps out there, I think. And hey, they're free. Can't get any better than that. All of you who check us out on the YouTube channel, no YouTube live stream tonight. However, the audio will be posted to the YouTube channel in the coming days. So however and wherever you're listening or watching, I bid thee the warmest of welcomes and I thank you for your fine company. All right, my good rockabilly friend, Ian Robertson is with me on the other side of the glass. Albert and Ryan are off pretty much for the month, taking a well-deserved holiday. I couldn't do the show without them, so they need a break. And we are going into our second hour with Dr. Paul Williams, who is the co-author of The Killing of Uncle Sam, The Demise of the United States of America. And Paul is a journalist, the author of 15 books, including Among the Ruins, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Catholic Church, Crescent Moon Rising, The Islamic Transformation of America, The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia. Incidentally, that is being made into a movie series for AMC Network. Paul is the winner of 3 first-place Keystone Press Awards and has written articles for major news outlets, including USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, Newsmax, The Counterterrorist, and National Review. He holds a PhD in philosophical theology from Drew University and has served as a consultant on organized crime and international terrorism for the FBI and an adjunct professor of theology, humanities, and philosophy. Incidentally, the website, if you are interested in learning more about the book, is www.killinguncleSamBook.com. Paul, welcome back to Hour 2 here on The Conspiracy Show.
Well, it's It seems like I never left you, Richard.
We spent a lot of time talking about sort of laying the groundwork. We talked about in hour one, Cecil Rhodes and the Secret Roundtable Society, and this quest really to extend the British Empire to the entire globe, over all of humanity, to control all of the resources. Africa, of course, was a jewel that they wanted. And then, of course, they wanted to take the colony back, the United States of America, which they lost under King George back in 1776. And that quest began with the formation of this, the Pilgrim, was it the Pilgrim Society?
Yes.
And who met at the Waldorf Astoria, and these were all the big mucky mucks, the elite of the elite. I mean, the 1% of the 1% we're talking about, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Morgans. They decided if you want to control a country, you need to control the money. And so they created, of course, the Federal Reserve on Jekyll Island rather surreptitiously back in 1913. And they also then moved into controlling education through these endowments, the Ford Endowment, for example, and the Carnegie Group, and all of these that funded the schools to the tune of 20%. They wrote the textbooks. I don't think we're telling tales out of school, so to speak, to suggest that, a diploma ain't what it used to be. So there has been this sort of homogenization, standardization, a dumbing down, and I'm thinking you want a pliable, you want a compliant populace. You don't want heretical thinkers and people who are going to say, "Hey, the emperor has new clothes." You want to train people to stack boxes, essentially.
Right, and you do not want professors in your universities and colleges and teachers in your high schools teaching anything contrary to what should be and what should be mandated to be taught.
Well, so what do we have now in the universities? We have certainly radical progressive professors who are, I would say, by and large, you would characterize them as being cultural Marxists. I mean, they're certainly, not sort of towing the party line, are they? I mean, or what is the party line?
Well, do you know what? In 2011, there was a study undertaken of the United States undergraduate students, and they realized that most students who graduated from colleges in the United States had received a degree without reading 20 pages of writing. A third of the students, 45% of them, showed no improvement in critical thinking from the day that they set foot on their college campus to the day they graduated. Another study showed that 25% of America's graduates were reading on a third and fourth grade level. Compared to 40 other modernized countries, the United States ranked 17th in literacy, 17th in math, 21st in science. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right,
it's just
right.
Complete. I saw it myself. In the schools that I taught, they used to segregate. When I first graduated from college, I taught in Abingdon Heights and Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, and they used to put the brightest of the bright with fellow bright students, average students with average students, and slow students with slow students. Now, this sounds right now outrageous, but that's the way the educational system in the United States worked. And the bright students challenged themselves, and they got brighter. And the average students got better. But what happened was right now, because of legislation called No Child Left Behind, you have to have the slowest of the slow students in with the brightest of the brightest. So somebody teaching there has to direct everything to the lowest common element in the classroom, which, of course, creates a real dumbing down, and that's what we're seeing right now throughout the United States. But it's by design. Once again, the foundations are demanding that, and they control the educational system.
But back to the radicalization on college campuses. I mean, back in the 60s...
That was all funded by the Rockefellers during the 1960s, all funded.
Right. I mean, back all in the funded. 60s, though, at least back in the 60s, you had students marching for more free speech. You had students marching for, you know, more liberty, more protection against privacy. And now they're marching against free speech. We have cohorts, hundreds of thousands of students being churned out who hate capitalism, who hate the First Amendment, who hate Western civilization.
Well, they're all being conditioned. They have been conditioned, and they really don't know what is taking place. They don't know anything about. We're talking about the monetary system. Not a damn thing about it. They know nothing about the way that their schools are being controlled. They know nothing about the false flag attacks that have been brought us into war after war after war. They know nothing about what's really taking place in the country. If you even talk to them, I taught college for years and years and years.
How did you survive? How did you survive?
I had to get out of it. Some of my students, I became toward the end. The dean of a college that I was teaching at used to just pass the students that I failed.
Right. But, I mean, with your views and your perspective, you would need armed guards to walk onto a college campus today.
Oh, man. I mean, well, I feel sorry for them. You know, I received a great education, a wonderful education, and I came from a very poor family. I mean, my father was a thread salesman. But, you know, I was a good student. I got a full scholarship. I received a great education in the United States. You know, I've got a background. My PhD was in Latin. Now, I mean, who writes a PhD in Latin these days? I mean, people couldn't even begin to. I mean, but in those days, believe me, it wasn't extraordinary. It was not an extraordinary feat.
Right.
Everyone that went to graduate school when I was at Drew University, for instance, where I studied, there were three people in my division. That's it.
Wow.
Three students. And that's all they took.
I want to dial things back now.
Get better. Good. I don't want to talk about myself.
No. This is all very important
Let's
stuff.
Let's go back. We talked about the way that this cartel was formed at the Pilgrim Society.
Yes.
The way they took over the economy, the way they took over the educational system. There's one thing I'd like to, if I could lead right into this.
Yes, please.
They took over the State Department.
Uh-huh.
That was an important thing. What happened was after World War One, they brought us into World War One. This is what's wonderful, Richard. If you talk to people in Canada, the United States, Britain, France, Germany, throughout the world, what caused World War One?
We're told that the German Navy was building up, and that this was perceived as a threat to Great Britain.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
that is true. It was all about money. People think the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand.
Right.
No. It was the fact that the British control of natural resources was being threatened by Germany. You're exactly right, and that was World War. It was hugely profitable. It created the industrial military complex. It was highly profitable for the Morgans and for Rockefeller. It created new technology with oil. World War One.
Sure.
You know, before then everything was run by coal. And World War One, you know, the British fleet was by the end of the war completely operating, you know, using oil. So it brought about huge changes, huge enrichment for the Rockefellers. At the end of World War One, they wanted to create a League of Nations that failed. When that failed, what happened here in the United States is the Morgans, this is the Pilgrim Society, the same bloody players, Richard. The players don't change. The same Pilgrims that created the society in 1903, they created the Council on Foreign Relations in 1920. And what happened with the Council on Foreign Relations is this, that it was formed just like the Secret Society, a circle within a circle within a circle within a circle, a private secret society, Council on Foreign Relations, no minutes, No records ever disclosed. Even their membership rules now are withheld from the public. But this one group, controlled by the Morgans and controlled by the Rockefellers, and totally, they start to develop study groups funded by the foundations, and these study groups start to outline what the policy of the United States should be, foreign and domestic.
Right, and all their members end up being in the administration.
Since the time of Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Right, right.
Every Secretary of State that we have had in the United States came from the Congress. Every single one. And every undersecretary of state, the entire State Department is controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. People right now will say, "Oh no, you're wrong, Paul, because Rex Tillerson is not a member of the Council." That's bullcrap. Rex Tillerson is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was the president of Exxon. Exxon is a leading member of the council. Then they say, "Oh no, Pompeo! We have now Pompeo." No, Pompeo's aviation group is a prime member of the council. They're all controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. That's our State Department, which controls our foreign policy and our domestic policy.
What about Zbigniew Brzezinski? Was he
total CFR?
And he started the Trilateral Commission, didn't he?
With David Rockefeller.
Mm.
Don't forget, David Rockefeller funded all that. David Rockefeller funded the United Nations. David Rockefeller funded all these things.
It all leads back to David Rockefeller. We'll take another time out. The Killing of Uncle Sam, Paul Williams. Stay with us.
Don't be afraid of the dark. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to our two-hour special with Dr. Paul L. Williams, the co-author of The Killing of Uncle Sam, The Demise of the United States of America. The other author is Rodney Howard Brown, not with us tonight, but we are happy, delighted to be with Paul. And we are covering a lot of ground, and even with 2 hours, we're just barely skimming the surface. So we've been talking about the Council on Foreign Relations. And now... So the State Department taken over very, very early on. Now, would it be fair to say that the executive branch was taken over in November of 1963?
I would say that the executive branch was taken over in 1932.
With FDR?
Yeah.
But
he was totally groomed by the Morgans and the Rockefellers, totally from day one. He's the one that confiscated the gold. He's the one that brought in these the big government programs. He's the one that brought it, that really lured us. And we had no business being in World War II. Lured us in there to further the interest of this cartel. People say, "Oh, well, we had to fight Adolf Hitler, and you know, we ought to fight we had to fight against the bad guy." Yeah, that really makes a lot of sense, because we were allied with Joseph Stalin, and compared to Hitler compared to Stalin looked like a piker. Hitler killed 10 million, Stalin killed 100 million. But in any case, that's. What happened after World War II, this is important too, the same cartel created the United Nations through the Council on Foreign Relations. And the United Nations, we formed a treaty, the federal government did, our federal government, with a treaty between a country and an organization. I mean, Richard, it doesn't make sense. You can't have a treaty between an organization and a country. I'm sorry.
Right,
you can have
right.
it between a country and a country. But we have a bloody treaty with an organization. In accordance with that treaty, we have been brought into war.
Right.
We have been brought
right.
into war. I mean, it's and under foreign leadership. But in any case, they created the United Nations. Along with the United Nations, this same cartel created something called the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund.
Right.
The American people don't understand this. It's all controlled. Do you understand the way that the World Bank works? The World Bank to developing countries and countries in need provides loans, billions of dollars in loans. All the loans, which are guaranteed by the federal government, by the way, come from Chase Manhattan, Morgan Stanley, the same members of this money cartel. All the money comes from them. And the first stipulation of the loan is that they're paid back first. And if they're not paid back entirely, and the demands are outrageous, what happens is the Rockefellers and the Morgans and the Rothschilds can confiscate the natural resources
right.
of the countries that they loaned money to.
Right, it's a fire
That's
sale.
Why throughout Africa, the Rockefellers are now controlling, and the Rothschilds, the water supplies of different, not only the water supplies, but taking the land and putting people in repopulating the people in different areas.
Right.
They're taking all of the natural resources. They're raping and pillaging because these countries that are receiving loans from the World Bank can't repay them. It's happened time and time and time again throughout South America. It's happening time and time again throughout Africa. It's happening throughout Southeast Asia. That these bastards are taking from the people their only source of wealth. They're taking up populations and resettling them in camps, and we're allowing that. And this is, once again, this is, so you wonder why people in South America right now, or people in Africa, or people in Southeast Asia, hate the United States. Well, do you know why? Because they associate the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund with the United States.
Right, but these groups and these people are ultranational. They're above. I mean,
this is not
the United States.
And
I mean,
people don't matter.
Right.
And another thing, to bring their aid to seize natural resources, they have brought the United States into war after war after war for no reason.
Right.
And they say, oh, we have to support the military and say, oh, we're proud of your service. No, no, no. You should never go into the United States military right now because you're not serving the interests of the United States. You're serving the interests of a money cartel.
The
money cartel right now in Libya, the money cartel right now that's interested in taking over Syria,
yes.
The money cartel that's interested right now in taking over the natural resources throughout Central Asia. I mean, please.
I want to make a couple of points here, though. One is what I think of the U.S. Constitution. I mean, I think that's one of the most important documents. I think it's a shining light. I think the idea of the United States of America, this experiment, this is a grand experiment, is a beautiful thing. I think it has been, you know, taken away from the people. But I think the United States of America, the people of the United States, the idea of the United States is a force for good in the world. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, in terms of the founding fathers of the United States, in terms of what America was supposed to be, Richard, I agree. In terms right now of what we're doing, no. I mean, right now what we are doing is we are allowing a money cartel to take us into war after war after war, killing millions and millions and millions of civilians for no reason except greed. Using weapons of mass destruction on a scale, that nobody could even imagine. George Orwell couldn't imagine dropping even in Iraq, dropping nuclear weapons. I mean, please, in Afghanistan, nuking them, and nobody's writing about it. dropping white phosphorus on civilian. No. This is not what the people in the Constitution that wrote the Constitution were thinking about. These are not what the Founding Fathers were thinking about. This is not Thomas Jefferson. This is exactly what they warned us against. And yet right now we're brought into war after war after war, and we are committing atrocities. You know, right now the CIA is toppling governments throughout the world. We've done it throughout Latin America under Operation Condor. We've done that. We've toppled the government in Turkey two or three times, in Greece the same way. In Italy, we got rid of Aldo Moro. We have toppled the government. And now people are saying, oh, the Russians are interfering with our election process.
Right.
I mean, please,
right.
Open up, realize what we're doing and what we continue to do. And the CIA, once again, is not beholden to the federal government. The CIA is not answerable. The CIA is not answerable to Congress. It's not answerable to anyone. It's not answerable to anyone. And the CIA is funded, thanks to the money cartel, almost totally through the heroin industry. This is all fact. And yet the American, I cannot say right now, in my country, as a man who grew up here and loved the United States, that America remains a shining light or a shining example. No, America has to we have to get back and realize what we are supposed to be, and we have to take steps to restore our government.
Every once in a while, a president comes along that's not reading off the script. Of course, you know, we had Abraham Lincoln, who was trying to revoke the charter for the central bank at that time. Correct.
Right.
We had, of course, Kennedy.
Kennedy, right?
Wanted to
mint our own money.
Trying to do the same thing, which, you know, and both, of course, shot in the head in public, which sends a clear signal. What about Nixon? I mean, because I look at Watergate in many ways as sort of a more sophisticated method of assassination.
Well, but Nixon, I grew up as a conservative. I wrote for National Review, as you mentioned before. I was a bona fide. I was on Fox News a gazillion times, bona fide conservative. But Richard Nixon did some atrocious things. What he did with the trade status with China, for instance, right
yes,
now.
Yes, I agree.
What he did with taking the dollar throughout the world off the gold standard. He committed what he did in Vietnam. I mean, the atrocities, really, really atrocities.
Oh, I agree that I don't think he was a great president. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, though, that when you have a president who he's not doing exactly what he's told to do.
Absolutely.
And rather than, I think the powers that be are getting a little more sophisticated in their methods. They don't use assassination anymore. They use scandal and blackmail
use Robert Mueller and people like that. Yeah,
right. So, do you think that's what happened to Nixon? And if so, where do you think he went wrong in their minds? Why do you think they decided?
I'm not sure that happened to I never did. You know, I was a fan of his from what I see and what Nixon was doing in China, for instance, with Kissinger. Kissinger was, of course, CFR, you know, up to his eyeballs. And Nixon was surrounded with CFR people. I think people just didn't like him. I mean, they control the press, but I can't see how he really ticked off David Rockefeller to the extent that, you know, that
right.
I think that they're probably it didn't matter. Look, at the president doesn't matter. Doesn't really matter that much. It didn't matter whether Nixon was in there or Ford or Carter or Reagan. It didn't matter. Doesn't matter.
What about
the policy's the same? They still control the State Department.
Right. What about
they still control the economy?
What
they
about
still control the educational system?
There's this legendary story, and I don't know if it's true. I want to run it by you. That in the early 90s, William Jefferson Clinton, then governor of a rather obscure state, let's face it. I think he was probably making about $48,000 a year as governor of Arkansas. No offense to the people of Arkansas. I'm just saying It's not one of the major, you know, states that we think of. And so he shows, he's invited to a Bilderberg meeting where he meets David Rockefeller, who proceeds to give him sort of a master's class in how things are supposed to work and the globalization and so forth. He asks Clinton, "Do you agree with this?" Clinton responds in the affirmative, and to which Rockefeller extends his hand and says, "Thank you very much. Congratulations, Mr. President."
I think, Richard, it goes, no, I think people who are perpetuating that are unaware that William Jefferson Clinton was, first of all, a Rhodes Scholar. So he was taken into that. Every Rhodes Scholar is taking in, you know, I mean, that's part of the Rhodes Society.
Sure, sure.
To perpetuate the
oh, no, I'm not discounting the fact that he was brilliant. He is a brilliant man.
No. I'm not saying brilliant.
Yeah.
He was a Rhodes Scholar. That means that he was that from the very beginning he was groomed for something.
Right.
And then the fact that when he was a governor of Arkansas, drugs were running through his country, or through his state, through Arkansas, like at Mena, the airport at Mena. And I mean, he was all part of the system from the get go.
Right, but I'm saying he was anointed at Bilderberg. Is that?
I think he was anointed when he became a Rhodes Scholar.
Ah, and any truth to the fable, the legend, or maybe it's fact that he was an illegitimate son of one of the Rockefellers?
Well, you know, he doesn't have that sharp Rockefeller nose. Take a look at the schnoz on David Rockefeller and
right.
William Jefferson Clinton.
I
don't know. I keep hearing, you know, he's the, you know, let's face it, Richard, we've heard so many things about the, you know, the heritage of certain people. For instance, of the Bushes, Barbara Bush, you know, her mother was, the Barbara Bush was the daughter of that great Satanist, Aleister Crowley.
Oh, I haven't heard that. Listen, I got to take a time out here. We'll come back. I got to pick up on that one. The Killing of Uncle Sam, Paul L. Williams here on The Conspiracy Show.
When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
We are back with Dr. Paul Williams, co-author of The Killing of Uncle Sam. Now, wow, what a cliffhanger. Just before the break, you laid a big one on us. The late Barbara...
I'd love to have another show on that one, Richard. You want me to talk about...
Just briefly, the late Barbara Bush was
you don't know this?
A descendant of Aleister Crowley? I did not know that. I did not know that. Am I disappointing you? I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm here to talk about The Killing of Uncle Sam, but if you want me to... Look, since we're on the conspiracy show, I guess I
minutes. I can't leave that out there hanging.
Well, Aleister, what happened was Barbara Bush's mother, okay, was an heiress who was married to the owner and the editor of. Two major magazines in the United States. I think one was McCall's, and I forget what the other one was. But her mother, who was a libertine, her name was Pauline, left her husband during the 1918, 1920, somewhere around there, and went to England without him, and she was a libertine, and she ended up living with a friend of hers who was living with Frank Harris, who was a pornographer, and Aleister Crowley. When she came, this is all true now. This you can substantiate. When Barbara Bush's mother came back to the United States, she was pregnant. And she was 3 months pregnant, and that during those 3 months, she had been away from her husband, and she had been in Paris living with Frank Harris and his mistress and Aleister Crowley. Now the word the scuttlebutt from that is that the offspring when she came back, you know, let's face it, it is very mysterious. This I can't substantiate. Her name was Pierce. Her real name was Barbara Pierce.
Right,
and she
right.
was married to McCall's, and I'm trying to think of the other. But she was a very, very wealthy woman. When she came back to her husband, she was pregnant, and the baby was Barbara Bush.
Right.
Which would mean that that by extension that George
W. Is the grandson or the
grandson.
Aleister Crowley.
Aleister Crowley, the great Satanist, who, of course, was involved in, you know, all types of things. He was... these are things that you can pretty well substantiate on your own.
All right, so...
That's just topic of another...
It is indeed.
Barbara Pierce.
All right. the progeny
but look
of...
At her. You know what's interesting, Richard?
Yes.
If you take a look at Barbara Bush, she bears an uncanny resemblance to Aleister Crowley.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
I mean, really, really uncanny.
All right. Now, this is a short segment, so I want to start this conversation, then we'll run out of time, and then we'll continue it into our last block. But I want to talk about the man that the mainstream media loves to hate, many on the left, even many on the right, and that would be the great disruptor, the 45th president, Donald Trump. Now, some would say... you look around him, you mentioned Pompeo and Tillerson before that, CFR. Is he really who he says he is? Is he the disruptor? Is he trying to break apart the deep state, or is he part of it?
Do you want me to venture a guess now?
Sure. Yeah. Perhaps. We'll start the conversation now, and then we'll carry it on after the break.
The answer to that is, Yan is Nayu in Russian. I don't know. I really, really, truly don't know. He does a lot of things that lead me to believe that he is controlled by the money cartel, and yet he does other things. I really, really, really can't answer that. The one thing that I do know is the things that point that he may not be under the control of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers is that he's so reviled by the press.
Yes.
And that they control the press and the media.
That's a great point. We got to take a time out. I always say, if you want to understand who Trump is, look at the people who are aligned against him. It says a lot. The killing of Uncle Sam, the demise of the United States of America, more with Paul Williams on the other side, right here on The Conspiracy Show.
Corporations, governments, and sometimes entire civilizations. What goes up must come down, and it lands on The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Keeping an eye on the new world order. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
We We are back with Paul Williams. Final segment. Wow, where has the 2 hours gone? This has been fascinating. This is like a master's class in the deep state. The Killing of Uncle Sam. And again, that's available at Amazon. And the website for the book is killinguncleSamBook.com. killinguncleSamBook.com.
And yes. Richard, if I may interrupt, all the proceeds from, I don't make a dime from the book, all the proceeds go to the River School of Government so that students can be educated, really educated, in what's taking place and how they can try to reverse things. And that, we should really talk about that for a bit.
Yes.
There are ways to reverse what has happened.
Well, let's talk about that for sure. Because, you know, you mentioned the School of Governance. One of the things that irks me is even people who ought to know better, politicians, constantly referring to the United States as a democracy.
Oh, the founding fathers hated democracy.
Yes, me too.
They warned against it.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It's the definition of the lynch mob, majority rule.
Yeah,
it's tyranny of the majority.
And I mean, the way that this republic is set up in the United States, I mean, people should be aware of that with the Electoral College and, you know, that. No, this is... was never meant to be a democracy. Even originally, only landowners could vote.
Well, no, but idea the idea is a good one. I think that the Congress shall pass no law, and then you have this this laundry list of inalienable rights, which of course have been trodden all over. But the idea again is what I'm talking about.
But immediately you got to realize the Americans in my generation, and just a few years ago, willingly relinquished all their rights for the sake of security by acquiescing to the Patriot Act.
Yes.
And all these people who are protesting and screaming on college campus, you don't hear anything about that. Their rights, their bloody rights, have been taken away from them. I mean, come on! If you're going to protest anything, protest that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Instead of protesting freedom of speech how anything that offends me is now hate speech and should be banned.
It's ridiculous.
So how let's talk about then. How do we, I mean, it seems insurmountable. It almost seems like, the elites have everything locked down and it's too late. Is it?
The answer is there is hope. But the hope is only a ray of hope. For instance, the people in the United States have to demand an audit of the Fed. They have to do that. The United States has to begin producing real money, not paper money, real money.
What does that mean,
money
though?
Based on a commodity.
What does that mean to audit the Fed? What would that entail?
Well, right now you realize that the Federal Reserve remains exempt from scrutiny by the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, the investigative arm of Congress. They don't disclose anything.
Could that be changed by an executive order?
That could be rectified by an executive order, but that's very easy because the Fed isn't really part of the government.
Right. Right. Okay.
That could be done.
So,
I mean, Ron Paul have been screaming about that for decades, and that only makes sense. Audit the bastards.
What would that mean to audit them? What would we learn?
It would mean. Do you know what you would learn? You would learn that much of the wealth of the United States has been stolen. You would learn who right now are the shareholders. Wouldn't you like to know who right now the present shareholders? Nobody knows that now of the Fed are. We know who they were in the beginning, but who are they now?
Right, right. Okay. So I mean, number one, audit.
From the beginning, many foreign bankers owned shares in the Federal. Well, who owns the shares in the Federal Reserve right now? Because they're controlling our economy.
Right. Right. So audit the Fed.
Audit the Fed. Restore using real money.
Would you go to the gold standard?
I would go on any commodity. Any commodity in the world, even on heroin, I'd go on as long as it's a commodity.
Seriously,
Richard, I'm saying right now. Right now the money can be withdrawn, manufactured at whim.
Right.
And therefore, we can be tossed overnight into a recession.
Right.
Or we can benefit from a prosperity, all because of a small group of international bankers. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so ought the Fed go back on the gold
commodity?
Go back on
oil. It can't be oil, because oil is declining in value right now.
Right.
I don't know. How about not only gold?
How about
silver,
electricity?
Gold, iron ore. I don't care.
How about electricity?
The problem with make it water.
Okay. All right. No, point taken. I don't want to belabor that point.
I mean, we can, you know, come up with any commodity.
Sure. Okay, so back to a commodity-based currency. Then what do we do?
And we have to take control. We have to stop endless war. Stop. War can only be declared by an act of Congress. Going back in 1965, when I was drafted, Richard, back in the day when you weren't even thought of yet, what happened was Lyndon Baines Johnson appeared on television and he said, our fleet, the United States fleet, has just been attacked by the North Vietnamese. There are hundreds of dead sailors floating in the Gulf of Tonkin. We have to have military action immediately. So hundreds of thousands of us Yanks were drafted and sent to Vietnam, and it was all bullshit. The North Vietnamese never fired on our fleet. Never did anything like that. There were no dead bodies of sailors. But we went in there and bombed the daylights out of Vietnam, went into a war. After that, you had George H.W. Bush saying, oh, guess what? Saddam Hussein has gone into Kosovo, and he's removing all these babies from incubators and throwing them on the floors of
Kuwait.
The hospitals.
Kuwait,
he's worse than Adolf Hitler. Do you remember all this stuff?
I want to correct you. You said Kosovo. You meant Kuwait. But, yeah, no, I...
I'm thinking of Kosovo, because Kosovo is another one. There you have Clinton saying, oh, in Kosovo, these Christian Serbs are massacring the ethnic Albanians, and at Rasak, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of ethnic Albanians buried in mass. It's all crap. We bombed the daylights out of Kosovo. Then you had George W. Bush saying, oh, guess what? Saddam Hussein is developing weapons of mass destruction. We have to bomb the crap out of him. Then you had Barack Insane Obama saying that in Libya right now, Gaddafi is turning the guns on his own people. He's going to slaughter all lies. So we go into war. We bomb the deal. Stop it. Stop it.
Right, right. But don't you, let me just
war
ask you.
Is only, and it's only to further the interest of the money cartel, who remain fixated, by the way, on the vast resources, reserves of natural gas and oil and the basin of the Caspian Sea. But that's a different matter. Okay, you stop endless war. Do you know what else you do? You stop university funding. Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Drew Ware graduate, they don't need money. They do not need money. Okay? Stop it. A lot of these schools that exist solely on federal funds aren't producing degrees worth crap. And they're producing students who only graduate from United States colleges and universities with one thing, debt. Astronomical. Stop funding American universities throughout the United States. That's a must, too.
What will that accomplish?
Impose tariffs. You know, the United States before the federal income tax, graduated income tax, and the Federal Reserve came into being, existed by tariffs. We're the industrial hub of the world. Okay, by that the government can earn its own by imposing tariffs. Another thing you have to, and with that, you downsize the government. Right now, in the United States, in 2000, 27% of the United States, made their living through industry. Now, 27% make their living by working for the government.
Let me ask you about tariffs here for a second, and that is the argument is, If you look at what free trade has done, yes, there's always winners and losers, but by and large, we are eradicating the worst of the poverty, abject poverty, at an incredible rate. And many people attribute that to free trade, or at least liberalized trade. How do you respond?
That's not true.
No?
I mean, what free trade has brought is the exact reverse of that. It has brought about the globalization of poverty. The people in the United States right now are impoverished. Right now, the factories, the manufacturing of goods, have all gone to third world countries. Capital is fluid. The labor force is stationary. Our labor force is stationary. People in the United States right now are happy when they get a job for $15 an hour at a Walmart. That is poverty. They're living in poverty. They graduate from college and they're terrible debt. They increase their debt when they buy a house and buy a car, when they have kids. They die under reverse mortgages. Richard, what this has brought, what free trade has brought, and this is from Cecil Rhodes and Morgan, their number one principle was free trade has brought poverty.
What about trade wars?
How can, right, well, you see, the fact is, right, that's when we talked about Nixon. How could anybody really, if we really had a trade war, the United States, even at this point, would prevail?
Sure, sure. But that, then people would say, well,
but
what about...
Why do we care about enriching China, who, by the way, you know, they don't buy our goods anyhow? Or Germany? I mean,
Friendly neighbors to the north, Paul?
Well, I think that, in all honesty, that's the legitimate question, because we're more than that. We're brothers. That's different. That's different. I mean, there can be a different agreement, but the fact is about the problem right now with our friends up north. Your prime minister up there, and you also have the problem of Quebec. I don't know how you deal with them. I mean, they can't stand the United States. They think they can't stand English Canadians.
There, you know what? There's certainly, and we've been through this several times with them. There is, though, an appreciation for their own culture, which I admire. You know, they want to preserve their culture.
Totally, in their own language. Yeah, but yes. I mean, once again, I mean, hey, form their own country.
Well, if I always say, if they go, I hope they'll take us with them. Listen, we are out of time, but this has been an absolute joy and pleasure to have you on, Paul. Thank you so much for this. Again, The Killing of Uncle Sam, and that's available at all good bookstores, Amazon.
And people should use it in their classrooms.
That may be a bit of a pipe dream until things change, but I agree. Uncle Sam book, killinguncleSamBook.com, killinguncleSamBook.com. Thank you so much, Paul.
Right, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that's it for me. My thanks to Ian Robertson. Back next week with Carl Gallup's Gods of Ground Zero. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed, and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.